Good morning. I happened to run across one of my old talks in my Bible this morning, and it was the last one I gave. And I looked on the date of it, and it was October 28th. So it's been 9 months and one day since I've been able to get up here and do this. And the last time I spoke, I hardly had a leg to stand on. And those of you that are visiting, I just had both my knees replaced during the winter. So the last time I spoke, I thought I was going to have to do it on a stool, but we managed through it. I'll be 65 years old on Wednesday since Mike brought it up. I guess I am old. And I may be rusty, too, since I haven't been up here for 9 months. So forgive me ahead of time if I get my tongue tangled up. Although I'm not retiring at 65, my mind is already gone to part-time. So anybody that gets to this point in their life can probably relate to that. I wanted to start off this morning telling you a story about my childhood. And I grew up on the farm, and we had a lot of chickens. We had laying hens, and Jamie and Ryan have some chickens. How many chickens do you have, Ryan? Six chickens. Oh, you got a few kids that are chickens, too? Oh. All right. Well, it varied when I was growing up. We'd have between 1,000 and 3,000 chickens at a time for laying hens. And one of the things that gets in the news anymore is about people that are concerned about how chickens are cooped up in the wire cages and they don't get out. And that wasn't the way it was when I was growing up. We had one big building and the chickens run loose all over inside, and and we had nests pinned up, nailed up on the side walls. Each one of those nests was probably about a foot square with a hole about so big. And to give the chickens a little privacy, my dad had stapled up either a cloth or a piece of canvas so it would cover that opening. And that's going to lead up to what's going to happen here in a minute. But when I was growing up, my weightlifting program didn't involve weights as people think of them today at all. My weightlifting program when I was in high school amounted to me shoveling feed by hand out of a feed wagon in another building, filling 2 5-gallon buckets up, and carrying those 2 5-gallon buckets through a spring-loaded door and then 100 feet down to the other end of the chicken house. And in the meantime, you'd have chickens running in front of you, flying in your face. And yeah, I never did successfully develop a love affair for chickens. I like them now when they're stationary on your plate. But growing up, I never did really like them that well. And so getting back, my whole childhood kind of revolved around these stupid chickens because I had to feed them, make sure they had water, and then my sister and I had to gather the eggs. And when you have 1,000 to 3,000 chickens, you can, depending on whether they're in a mold or not, you'll get anywhere from 500 to 1,500 eggs a day. And I can't remember now how many we actually ended up with, but it was a lot. And we'd carry these wire baskets around to these nests, and we'd have to reach our hand in underneath that cloth and try and pull the eggs out. So when you're gathering eggs, there was many possibilities of what you were going to experience. You'd either find a nest that might be empty. You might have a nest that had 1 to 6 eggs in it, because it had multiple hens in it. And they might break an egg in the nest, and because the opening was covered, you wouldn't see it, and you'd stick your hand right in that broken egg. And all the other eggs would be covered with it. he still had to get them out. But some nests, the hen was still in there. And you'd run into one of three personalities with chickens that I experienced. And number one would be the passive chicken that just sat there, let you get the eggs out because it was too scared to do anything else. So I called them chicken chickens because they were too scared to do anything else. Number two was the hyper chicken. You'd reach in, the chicken would panic because somebody was invading their space. And they'd fly out and hit you in the face with their wings. And they'd probably break their egg on their exit. So number three, what Mom always called the sitting hens. And I call them the sitting chicken. And they had a totally different personality. They claimed territorial rights. And if you come in my nest, it's fighting time. And you stick your hand in her nest. And I'm going to use a phrase here Mom won't agree with. You're going to get bit. And Mom will want to correct me right now and say, now, David, chickens don't bite. They peck. Well, this is my story, and it felt like a bite to me. And being the mild-mannered teenager that I was, I grabbed that chicken by the neck and I threw it out, and it hit some boards outside the neck and broke its neck and died. And when you've got 1,000 to 3,000 chickens, you can have one get sick almost every day and die. So at the end of every day, my dad would go through that chicken house and check for sick birds. This bird wasn't sick. This was probably the healthiest bird in the whole flock. And it was obvious that it did not die of natural causes. So I could not leave that chicken lay in there for my dad to find and to begin asking questions. Why did this bird die? Do you know anything about this? Oh, I saved my dad the trouble, and I took it outside so he wouldn't even have to see it. In life, we have to ask why. My dad was in business. He had to know why things happened in order to stay in business so he could make corrections. When you are parenting, you often have to ask why. And child may not really want to give you the truth of why they did something. And as a Christian, if our faith is going to evolve and make us stronger, it is necessary that we ask, why are we doing this way? Why? I need to understand. Now, if you have a 2-year-old, his favorite word is probably why. When you say, don't do that, why? You might get hurt, why? And now that I think about it, a 5-year-old's favorite word may be why. A 7-year-old's favorite word may be why. And a teenager's favorite word may be why. So, as we are growing up, we don't go through a phase in life where we aren't questioning why. We always want to know a reason for the decision. Now, my mom, she probably still has this picture, but it shows a mother hen with her feathers all puffed out. And she's looking down at her little chicks. And the caption underneath the picture just says, because I said so. And that fit well at our house with all the chickens. But sometimes as a parent, you end up telling your child, because I said so. And not getting into the particulars every time the question why comes up. So we're always asking why all through our life. At least we should be. So is that a bad thing? Only if you're not prepared with a response. Many are leaving serving God because they either don't ask their questions of why or they're not getting answers for their questions of why. 2 to 3 years ago, I was going to put together a handout that we could use to answer typical questions about our faith, the questions that people have about the Bible. But I never got around to it. And this weekend, I found it. It says right on there, this is around to it. So, I have around to it now, so I'm going to make an effort to get this handout done. So, ladies, if your husband has something he was supposed to do and he never got around to it, you can borrow mine, hand it to him, and say, get it done. But we need a way to crack the door open to introduce the Bible to people today and keep those who are already here. Is that one won't work? Now, this might be one title we might consider if we were trying to put up the effort to answer questions so people understand. We could entitle this handout, The Book of Why. So many times we are uncomfortable initiating a conversation or talking to people or answering questions. And we say, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to start. If we could get our minds together and assemble questions that we think people ask and have scriptures lined up to answer those questions, we could make either a handout or in today's society, we could make it to where people could load it on their phones and email it to someone. And this could be a starting point for getting people's questions answered of why the Lord wants us to do things the way that we do them here. When it comes to religion, we can't be the mother hen and simply say, because I said so. People need to understand that the Lord gave things for us to do for a reason, and we are trying to fulfill those directives by doing the service the way that we do, by doing the studies the way we do. And it is important that people understand the why of religion. Why do I need to be baptized? Why was Christ baptized? Why don't you have a band? Why don't you have a woman preacher? In 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, verse 15, it reads, but sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. We need to be able to answer why. But now, if you'd like to be a part of this effort to get the word out, we need you to ask what or why, so we can get you grounded in the truth as well as helping others know what the truth is. I want every one of you to feel like you could be a part of this information packet simply by turning in one question or a group of questions, or when the questions come in, being part of a group that helps fill in the answers. Perhaps you can go around and ask people if they've got a why they would like to have considered. What is sin? Is it just doing illegal things? not according to the scriptures. Why do you withdraw from people in some cases? Because the Lord demanded it. Why do you believe our loving God won't save everyone? Well, one good reason is when you go to the Old Testament and you find out how the Lord's patience was pushed to the end. We have several examples of when the Lord said no more. The first one that probably comes to mind is when Noah was saved during the flood, along with 8 souls were saved. Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed by fire and brimstone because they became so evil. The Egyptians drowned in the Red Sea to make an example of them. But on Wednesday night class, we've been studying in the book of Ezekiel, and it reminded me of another one that tops all those stories in my mind. Because the Lord was so fed up with Israel not worshiping him the way that he instructed them to. As a matter of fact, a lot of them weren't worshiping him at all. They were worshiping idols. And the Lord used the prophet Ezekiel to go down and tell them that I am turning you and your wickedness over to the Babylonians, and there will be great consequences for that. To the point in Ezekiel, the 5th chapter, verses 10 and 11 and 14, it talks about the Jews would turn to cannibalism in order to survive the Babylonian captivity. And he predicts that fathers would eat sons and sons would eat fathers. The Lord cannot tolerate sin. He has given us an avenue to escape it. He has given us stories to remind us of these things. And it is up to us to understand the why behind these stories, that we might be prepared to meet our Maker. 2 years ago, I heard the story of a young girl that was around 4 years old, 3 to 4. And her brother was in really bad shape. The family had lost their home because of all the medical bills that this brother had spent on him to try and make him well. And the girl heard her father say one day to her mother, "The only thing that could help him now is a miracle." And knowing that they got their medicine down at the pharmacy nearby, she grabbed her piggy bank out of her bedroom. She went to the pharmacy and interrupted the pharmacist as he was talking with a man and asked him, "How much is a miracle? Do I have enough money in my piggy bank to buy a miracle? My brother needs a miracle." She had $1.11 in her piggy bank. The friend the pharmacist was talking to just happened to be a neurosurgeon. And that is also what the boy needed to save his life. And the neurosurgeon decided he would get involved. And I believe he told the girl that she had enough money in the piggy bank that they were going to try and get her a miracle. And she saved her brother's life by asking a question. You can save somebody's soul by asking a question. You can be part of an even bigger miracle, saving souls and maybe troubled lives, by helping with this book of why. Help people get the answers they desperately need to save their souls. We can't answer every question we have about life. Why do kids get sick? Why this? Why that? But we know all things necessary for salvation are given when we read 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 3. And we also know it is our responsibility to share the truth with others. We cannot hide our light and please God. We cannot be a barren fruit tree, as the Lord struck down the fig tree because it had no fruit, as an example to those around him. James chapter 4, verse 17 tells us, to him who knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. When we fail to take up the opportunities of doing good, we will have to answer to the Lord. We claim to be Christ-like and fail to take advantage of opportunities. We know we should be doing more. We're losing family and friends to the world. I ask you to consider to be a part of this handout, whether you help make up questions or help find the answers or help organize the language into text that can be helpful to people, whether it's just one question of why or a whole list of questions of why that you might have. Be a part of the effort to answer the why in people's lives. Then we can easily have an option in today's digital world to crack the door open, to share the gospel, and fulfill Colossians, the 4th chapter, verse 6. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer every man. Ask the questions, and let's find the answers, that we can save a soul from hell. We're going to close today and give you an opportunity to think about your relationship with God. If it needs adjustment, we want to help. We'll give you that opportunity as we stand and sing.